Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McEady. All right, you guys, welcome to whatever episode this is of Dunzo. It is me, Troy McEady, and I am so excited for this. You guys have been waiting for this episode literally for 4 years, so hopefully I deliver. I feel like I will because I have some really great guests with me here today. I am joined by Ashley and Claire from the Celebrity Memoir Book Club podcast. How are you guys?
How are you, Ashley? You could go first.
I'm great. You know, really doing brilliantly. I don't have a bed right now, so I've been sleeping on the couch, and so that really sums it up, I would say.
Where's your bed?
Well, I got a new bed, and I like had someone come collect the old bed, and I got my timing bad.
Okay.
So now I have no place to sleep. I mean, I have a couch, I have a home, I have a whatever, but I really feel like not having my routine has really ruined my life.
Not having a bed will throw a wrench in your plans.
Exactly. It makes me feel very divorced.
Yeah. Very dad lost his job kind of gig.
Yeah.
Me and Ashley last night got invited to a party, like a fashion week party. And when we went, we were on the list, and it turned out the list did not exist. So we did get all dressed up with somewhere to go and then had to turn around and just go home. And so I organized my entire day today around being hungover this morning. And I woke up and I was like, well, I'm completely fine.
Oh, you're like,
I'm well hydrated.
I'll just drink that Gatorade just cause.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm just sitting here being like, and at this point I was supposed to take an Advil. At this point I was supposed to be watching Netflix.
Well, you know what? Honestly, you're lucky. You avoided a hangover. Like you swerved. You dodged a bullet.
I do believe the universe was saying to me like, this isn't where you belong. And I was like, you're right. Yeah. I didn't belong there. And that's why I wasn't allowed in.
Yeah. You could get drunk today.
Yeah, whatever. I'll get drunk with my friends. I was too old to be there.
I was gonna say that I am obsessed with you guys' podcast, like beyond. Thank you. Right now I'm working through. I can't believe you guys did Jenna Jameson. I like can't believe it, honestly.
I had no idea that I was gonna love her as much as I did. I was like, oh, this will be like a fun porn star book. It'll be saucy. And then I was reading it and I was just like, I wanna hug her. And Claire, if there's one thing about my personality, something that's like deeply intrinsic to who I am, is that I don't hug often.
I love that.
I love Jenna Jameson that we read about. I do think Jenna Jameson since then has gone a bit off the rails.
Totally.
Politically, personally. I feel like then she was just like a sweet girl doing her best with the card she was dealt. Now I think she has taken some stances. I don't know that we would get along at a dinner party, but God bless her. She's been through more than me. Who am I to point a finger?
No, I get that. I feel like when she wrote that book, she was always like the smart one. She was like ahead of the joke. Like she was like, you know what I mean? And then it felt like after that book came out, like she actually got chewed up and spat out by Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she went to a horrible custody battle where she lost custody of two twin boys that she had with Tito Ortiz, who was somebody who beat her up constantly. And somehow it was deemed that she was the domestic abuser in the two of them, which feels just like commonsensically not right. Also, he said that she spent like $8 million on drugs for 4 years. So I guess she relapsed pretty bad. Mm-hmm. I think she had a real tough time. I mean, to have two little boys out there that you haven't been able to see, I think in 8 years, she started over. But I think the damage that was done was really like set in stone at that point. Like, I do think there's a certain point where you're past what therapy can redeem. And I think therapy could have helped her through her childhood, but it's just like, it's too late for her now. Now we just have to hope she makes it from here on out.
Yeah. No, yeah, I get that. She was a fucking mess on, I don't remember which therapy show she was on.
Oh, therapy show. You can't put people on the therapy show.
Was she on a Dr. Drew one?
Dr. Drew is just, I think he like just changed his first name to Doctor and his last name to Drew legally so that we have to call him that. Is that why we call him Dr. Drew?
Can I tell you, I went to school with his daughter and I like, he has triplets and I met them and that whole family's a freaking mess. And it's funny because the daughter is like this really like bisexual, poly, like she's recovered from an eating disorder. She's very like pro body positivity, like kind of like left-leaning socialist, but she just came out with this book with her dad about like how to talk to your kids about awkward conversations. And there's just something very like privileged, tone deaf about her, where she's like on paper and on Twitter, very like leftist, very Brooklyn, Bushwicky, right. You know what I mean? But then totally. Also her dad, who I feel like is kind of conservative, was like very anti-COVID, very like questionable. She's like 100% cashing in on the famous name, and she wants to be a writer. She like got her MFA, and I think to then write a book with your Dr. Drew dad is like kind of cutting the line. It's you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
really
yeah.
Being like, no, this is nepotism. No question about it.
Do they all purse their lips and put their hand on their chin when they talk and shake their head up and down?
I like can't even fathom her as a real person in real life at this point, even though I literally went to school with her and knew her in real life. At this point, she is just like a Twitter avatar to me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She's very much a Twitter persona.
She's just a profile photo.
Mm-hmm. Their mom is very into like, she like has a full-time psychic on staff.
Really?
What? It was hard for me to say psychic because I meant to say like psychologist. Do you know what I mean? I was about to say psychologist, but I was like, no. I'm pretty sure she has a full-time
a
psychic that like comes with them everywhere they go.
Oh, that's iconic. Like that's narcissism, that. Like on a level that I can relate to.
I'm obsessed with being like, tell me what the stars are saying about me now.
Yeah. So, like, what's in my future for today or whatever?
Wait, sorry. It just got cloudy. A cloud just passed. Can you recheck the stars for me?
What about love or whatever?
Yeah. I have a direct call to the universe at all times.
Yeah, that's amazing.
She'll also go get my dry cleaning.
So, yeah, I said that I've been teasing this episode literally for 4 years. Like, I just talk about Scott Storch in passing so often because the people that I cover on this podcast, a lot of them have slept with him. A lot of them have had music produced by him. A lot of them have bought drugs from him.
Is that his, like, side gig? Is that his, like, girl boss, side hustle, passive income, or what? Because it seems like, why would you be selling drugs if you're also a major music producer?
Well, he blew through a, like, $600 million fortune on
you
drugs.
You blow through that. I mean, you like
snort actively through it. Like, yeah, he was like buying planes and like buying islands and buying people mansions. He was
but, like,
buying
with
like
no residual value. Like he like I guess yeah. It's like a plane is like a car. Like as soon as you fly it off the lot, it like goes half in value.
You have right. To think an island that's gotta appreciate. Like I always like they can't take this shit to eBay and reclaim a bit of it. Like I don't understand.
What if he bought an island, but they were like, oh my god, actually that was a sandbar. Might be anyway. It's drowned.
He like bought Clinton Bay on accident. But no, yeah, he just like he's famous now for having blown through like an absurd amount of money. And he had like, you know, this crazy rise to fame, having like produced all these iconic songs for people like Dr. Dre and Beyonce and whatever. And now he like, you know, we'll talk about it, but like he just is sort of known as the guy who lost it all. Like, I think that, you know, he's been given opportunities to work again. But for the most part, like, he's just sort of a tragic tale, I guess, if you will.
I don't, tragic is like a tough word for me because I kind of feel like.
No, Claire, Google a photo of him because if you look at his face, I feel like you would find it tragic.
It's pure tragedy and it's pure, it's like in its purest form, his face is tragic.
He looks so juiced up and.
Oh my God.
He looks melted.
Oh my God, this is a man who was taking the ferry from Staten Island to Manhattan to go to a ladies drink free tonight party in 2004, and he fell off the ferry and he got waterlogged, and we found him 10 years later, a perfect artifact of its time.
Yeah.
That is what that man looks like. Willing to put money on the table right now that he was an early investor in Ed Hardy.
Oh, for sure.
He was an early investor in Hot or Not, like the original Facebook. Do you remember when Facebook was just to rank women? I feel like he invested in that. And then when Mark Zuckerberg was like, we're actually going to make it like a networking thing, he was like, I'm out.
Yeah. We're not just ranking women's faces anymore and like their boobs.
No, activity, no thank you.
Yeah, he's an interesting character because you definitely have to be, I mean, to even know who he is, like, you have to be a millennial. You can't be younger than, like, a certain, I mean, you honestly, I would be shocked if anybody younger than, like, 22 had ever heard his name ever. But back in the day, you would hear people whisper his name in songs. If you were a fan of Paris Hilton's album, you heard a lot of Scott Storch in the background of her songs because he produced her whole album.
And I think Stars Are Blind is one of the best songs of all time. And I unironically I wanted to be the first dance at my wedding.
I live for that. That honestly, Paris's music, her old, like that album, that first one, iconic. Yes. Nothing in this world, Stars Are Blind. It's iconic. Jealousy.
Honestly, I do think that if it had come out under different contexts, mm-hmm. it would have been like celebrated. But because it was during a time when people were like, oh, Paris, what the fuck? Like, if she had like really gunned it and tried to like earn her pop career, I like do think that people would have celebrated it. But because she was just like, this is a fun project, everyone was like, shut the fuck up.
Totally. And it's interesting because it's like, so he had gone from, I'm going to get into like his history and stuff. I'm going to talk about like why he's famous. And like, I do want to respectfully, like he's a real artist and a real musician. And he really has contributed like an unimaginable amount to pop culture and to our lives as far as music, even if you don't know who he is. So I do want to talk about that stuff. But as far as like the Paris Hilton years go, there's an interesting phase of his life where his like, rap friends, like people like Dr. Dre are like, why are you giving beats to Paris Hilton? Like, why are you producing Paris Hilton albums? Why are you working with Lindsay Lohan? Like, he had a real weird tabloidy early 2000s.
Like, he was trying to fuck them.
Yeah, he was like, they do coke and they want to fuck me. Hello. Like, it's not hard to figure out why I'm hanging out with Lindsay Lohan at 3 a.m. Hello.
Yeah, plus, think about how much money was in those projects. Like, yeah, the record label is like, of course we want like good, you know, Dr. Dre albums or whatever. But like Paris was probably like, oh, I'm willing to pay someone $1 zillion to produce my album. That was just
And then Lindsay, every song she did was tied with a movie. Talk about getting a chunk of the Herbie Fully Loaded profit share.
Oh my God. Yeah, he just seems like a real insecure, like just one of those guys that like, was the dork his whole life, and then he became rich and people wanted to sleep with him, and he was like, you know, feeling his oats or whatever for a few years and buying people planes or whatever.
I wish I'd known him. I wish I could have gotten a plane out of that phase in his life.
You very easily could have, honestly.
Fuck. What if we were like, Scott, we need an intro song for the podcast, could you make one? And he's like in between Dr. Dre and Beyonce sessions.
He's like, yeah. Totally. He's like, Justin Timberlake, can you hold for 1 second? I have to make a podcast song real quick.
We send it back with notes. We're like, hey, I don't think you're getting the essence of who we are. Could you try again?
Yeah, I know
that does not feel right.
I know that you have produced songs that are in like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but So Scott Storch was actually what I did know about him, honestly, and I feel kind of like an idiot. Because it's like, I guess, common knowledge, but I didn't know. But Scott Storch is one of the first members of the Roots. And as a teenager, he was introduced to this guy named Richard Nichols, who was the manager of the Roots. And he said during a Red Bull Music Academy lecture in Canada, he said, he took me under his wing. Eventually, after my parents found out I wasn't going to school, they said, you either go to school and you can stay or you got to go. And I did odd jobs and did whatever I had to do to support myself at 15, 16 years old. And I got a record deal with the Roots. If anybody's interested, he has like a documentary on YouTube that was done through Vivo. And I also read a lot of his like Wikipedia and stuff. And like, from what I gather about him, like he never had like a real desire to be like a solo artist or like release his own music. Like he was always somebody who was like, I just want to be in the studio and produce music for famous people. Which I feel like is a very specific personality trait to be like, I'm a narcissist, but I don't want to be famous.
I think that's the way to be. I don't know. I can't remember who said it. I feel like it was like Quavo maybe who said, I'd rather be rich than famous. And I do think we're getting to an era where that was like very prescient, because right now, like the ups and downs of celebrity are so high and so low and everything is so tumultuous that to be a David Foster type, to just be in the background and have the connections and get invited to every party. There's something, the influencer's influencer, but it's like the famous person's celebrity.
Yeah.
That's like the prized place to be, I think. And I think it showed a lot of foresight on his part to know that that's the sweet spot, to be the person that Lindsay Lohan needs. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Man, I did not know that he was in The Roots. We know Questlove. And I know.
Yeah.
We don't know Questlove, but one time he DM'd Claire, I think, trying to hit on her.
But
you meant like no. Oh shit.
Well, I mean, no,
of Questlove. No, we know Questlove.
Oh, your dear friends. He's a dear colleague.
He definitely was trying to hit on me because I was on Rye at the time. But the way he did it was he said, this insane project me and Ashley had just done called Our Talk Show, where we were just in bodegas being ridiculous. He said it was genius. And at the time, not one person watched that project. And I was like, wow, what does it mean about us that we did this comedy thing that only Questlove recognizes as genius? And I was like, I guess we are just like way ahead of our time.
Because you can see Claire's nipples in half of the videos.
Again, though, only Questlove recognized how important those are.
He's like, it's genius, girls. He like watched it on mute.
Yeah. You guys are so funny.
He didn't even play. He just watched the like thumbnail picture and he was like, this is good comedy.
He's like, Claire, you're an artist.
I love what you're doing with your shirts.
Yeah, keep wearing white tank tops and doing art, please. But yeah, so then from there, Scott was introduced to Dr. Dre, which is like the biggest come up of his entire life and his career. It basically made him who he was. That was around 2004. And at this point, Scott Storch was making close to $1 million a month, which resulted in this crazy drug habit. And from what I gather, just based on what he said, because he's a few years sober now, and he said, like, I never tried coke, like I'd never tried anything. I was like a huge pothead. And when he got a lot of money, he was buying like crazy lump sums, like suitcases of weed. And then a girl introduced him to coke. And he was like,
oh, he had never heard of coke. He was in The Roots. He had never heard of coke before. He was 15 years old trying to make it as a musician. And it wasn't until some girl, girls are so evil. Like, yeah, right. I'm sorry.
And I'm like, and you were recording with Dr. Dre in the studio, but you never saw like coke? Girl.
Not buying it.
All right.
I don't buy that. He just didn't know what it was. He was like, they are so dusty. Right? So much dandruff.
He's like using a Swiffer wet jet on the cocaine. And again, I'm about to make fun of him a lot, so that's why I'm doing this. I just want to say, you know, he's a musical prodigy. He's been described as a prodigy. In that documentary that I mentioned, you know, in the first scene they show him playing piano, I was just like, wow, like this man is like an actual artist, but also disgusting and looks like his skin is going to fall off of his face.
He looks like a water balloon.
Yeah, he literally looks waterlogged. Like, you're right.
Yeah.
And yeah, he taught himself how to play piano. He taught himself melodies. And
he has the head shape of like a mossy rock. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, his hair really looks painted on.
It's like lumpy in a hard way, but then also soft in a mossy, like wet, always damp way. Like something about his face looks like it has the moisture level that would be perfect for bacteria.
He looks like has like siblings who are very successful, like bodybuilders, but he was born like both late and premature and like can't do anything else. You know what I mean?
He's the runt of his litter.
Yeah. Like the runt, like an overfed runt.
Yeah.
It looks like he got like back alley filler that turned out to just be wet cement.
Yeah. Atlanta filler. Atlanta hotel filler.
Yeah. Sorry, Scott Storch. We're done.
Oh, Scott Storch is already, he's unsubscribed from the Patreon. I've lost a listener. It's fine. I made a little list of songs or albums that he worked on. It's way longer than this, but he produced Pink's Misunderstood, Christina's Dirty album, a ton of Beyonce's Dangerously in Love. He produced Lean Back by Fat Joe, Candy Shop by 50 Cent, Lighters Up by Lil' Kim, Paris Hilton's entire album, City High. He produced basically any song that Justin released with Timbaland, he like also worked on. So he was a major part of Future Sex Love Sounds.
Which Justin just admitted himself as like his best album. It was the 15 year anniversary of that album yesterday. And Justin Timberlake came out and was like, this was as good as it got for me. And we were all like, spot on.
Yeah.
they literally, thanks to this fucking blockhead, he literally produced Cry Me a River, which like obviously changed Justin's life. He did a Me Against the Music remix for In the Zone. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. He was one of the biggest producers of the 2000s, and he basically helped, like, if you look at the music where he started producing and like where he sort of fell off, he really was responsible for like a very specific, the sound of like our childhoods, basically. He like helped create it. And I wrote in my notes that I think one of the things I find the most interesting about him is that he never really like shied away from producing music that, I don't know, someone on his he did music that someone of his caliber like would have technically been beneath him. Like he would go do a Dr. Dre song, but then be like, I have to leave to go produce, like, you know, Hayden Panettiere wants to do a song and I want to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He did not gatekeep the production.
Yes, that's the best way to put it. He didn't gatekeep the production.
Man, a Scott Storch life story jukebox musical would have a phenomenal soundtrack.
Can we talk? Like, I'm ready for that playlist. Like, I need it. Yeah, so he was a giant nerd. He, like, lived in the studio, just a big giant music nerd. And he obtained a $100 million fortune and then lost his fucking mind. Notoriously lost his shit. Was doing things like buying, like, 5 luxury cars at once for absolutely no reason. He would go and be like, I want 5 Rolls Royces for no reason. After like doing a bunch of coke, he would fly around on, you know, $100,000 jets to get dinner and then fly back home. Like,
I am not environmentally friendly.
I also do not think logistically, I'm like laughing so hard at the idea of him like flying from the Burbank airport to LAX to go get pasta or something and then spending 2 hours in traffic going to each airport. Do you know what I mean? Like,
for Chipotle.
Yeah, like, I don't know that airports are ever like conveniently located near a 5-star restaurant, I have to say.
He's such a dick. I remember when I did my Christina series, I did like a 20-part episode on Christina, and she worked with him on Dirty, on Stripped, and she wanted to work with him again on her next album. So she was like, come on, Scott, like, let's make the magic again. And he was like, okay, I'm willing to, but you have to like send me a private jet and pay for it. And she was like, well, no, I'm not doing that. Just come to the studio and record with me. And he said no. And they like had a big falling out. And she ended up writing a song about him on her next album called F U Scott Storch.
Wait, is that fucking true? It's literally called F U Scott Storch.
It's called F U S S.
S.
But yeah, it's about him. And it's literally about how he produced songs for her and then became a coked out asshole. And yeah,
I love it. I love it. I can't wait for me and Ashley to break up and for me to do a podcast called like My Falling Out with AH. And then when people are like, oh, is this about Ashley? I'll be like, no.
I'm going to do one called Never Podcast with CP. And they'll be like, who?
You're like, you have to figure it out. It means different things for different people.
It's just like it's a universal feeling that we all have. Like, every girl reaches a point in her life where she says, I'm never again podcasting with CP.
It's a rite of passage.
Like a bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
I have a quote here from Billboard magazine. This is from 2014. This is about the sort of like peak of his like spending times in his life before he was broke. It says, at the peak of his fame, he was throwing now legendary parties at his Palm Island mansion, purchasing a 117-foot yacht called the Tiffany, and amassing a collection of exotic cars that included rare Ferraris and a Bentley that he says was his everyday going to the grocery store ride. He bought piles of bling and traveled to recording sessions on chartered Gulfstream private jets. He said, I would always be going from LA to Miami to New York to Russia to Saint-Tropez, he recalls, cost about $50,000 for a domestic flight, $250,000 for overseas. Yeah, that's an expensive habit. Just like, you know, one of those like douchey guys that had like a Tony Montana like poster in his like room in high school and was like, I'm going to live like that one day.
I just think it's a lot of airplane time. I can't imagine it was good for his circulation.
It's like,
I guess you see that now in his face.
Yeah, he's bloated above the neck.
And that is a high altitude bloat. You know what I mean?
Right. It's the kind where
that
you
is a PJ Habit bloat. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He also mentioned in his Viva documentary that when he was going through his like rock bottom or whatever in the music industry, and celebrities he gave all these hit songs to, they all turned their backs on him, including people like Dre and Justin and Beyonce. And he's been very open about it. And he was basically like a social pariah. Like, if you worked with him at a certain point, it was like, you're working, like, then people think you're a crackhead because you're in the studio with Scott Storch. The tabloids started referring to him as the most loathsome man in the music industry, and they named him McDouche. And he got this weird like public thing with Janet Jackson because the label paid for this really expensive recording time, and instead of working on her album, he threw a party at his house. So Janet Jackson is sitting in the fucking studio waiting for this bloated douchebag, and he decides to ghost her and throw a party as she's like paying him.
That is kind of a sick move.
he was a piece of shit, and he's very open about it. I've mentioned many times in the podcast before that during this time, like, you know, as a successful music producer, like, he became known as somebody who would exchange, basically, like, his whole thing was he would exchange beats for drugs. So if you were, you know, like a celebutant who wanted to do an album, or just whoever, you know, somebody who wasn't like maybe on like a Beyonce caliber.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you are Hayden Panettiere and you really want to put a song,
you are a Dixie D'Amelio of 2004.
Exactly. He was like, well, I'll have sex with you and then I'll give you a beat and then we can do coke together. And that's what he became known for. He has produced songs with a lot of women that I care about, and that makes me sick to my stomach. The first one being Miss Britney Jean Spears. Yeah, they actually dated a little bit many moons ago in 2003. And during the time he was working on music for her, but they had known each other, I guess, for years. They had like recorded in Miami together. And he was just one of those people that you would see with Britney in 2007, like in hot tubs and stuff, holding drinks or whatever. You know what I mean?
My God, poor Britney. I really feel like, first of all, she might be one of the least, I guess now she's dating a literal model, but I do think they hired him to be her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Because he's hot.
So you guys both believe that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think he's gay for sure. And I do think that they have a relationship that it is like a mutual love and respect. Maybe it's sexual just because they're both hot people. And I do think that sexuality is one spectrum, but hotness can supersede it sometimes.
This is a place where we don't agree, because I think he's like on the payroll of the conservatorship, and he's like kind of playing both sides of them, like not smart. I don't think he's like a genius, but I do think that he like likes Britney and like feels bad, but I do think he's like on the payroll and like keeping her in check.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know where I fall at this point. I've been all over the place. I do think he's hired. I've made the joke that if you've ever watched the show Gigolos on HBO, like, you know, that, or on Showtime, like, you know, he's hired. Like, come on. Britney just ran into this man at a fucking Ruby Tuesdays or whatever. Come on.
Yeah. He was in Slumber Party, the music video.
Yes, he was. I just think that, like, her, you know, if this is a woman who can't swipe her credit card at Starbucks, like, her dad sets up her relationships. You know what I mean? I don't know. I feel weird. I think that he's a good guy. I just don't think that it's like, there are people.
I don't think he's evil. I think he's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's like, oh, I just like get an allowance from her dad to like take care of her and also make sure that she doesn't ask too many questions and doesn't like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's like cruel, but I don't think that he's like, on our side, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think he really likes being famous a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just think,
do you think she knows
that he likes to be famous, or that he's
that he's paid?
Because here's my thing is like, if the conservatorship is like, we know the conservatorship is abusive and shouldn't exist. Like, obviously, like just like fundamentally, like she's a grown woman who like should have human rights. But if it is this like deeply abusive situation that she has talked about now in a couple of these like hearings and recordings where like she is kind of like being like deeply mistreated on every level, for her boyfriend to have spent the last couple of years being like, well, what am I gonna cause a stir about it? Like, I don't know. I just feel like if he like genuinely loved her, there would be like more effort to get her out of this and not so much like game playing on both sides. I just think it like is pretty fucked up if he's been watching this happen for years now and like is kind of just like, but what was I gonna do? Go against her dad? It's like, I don't know, the internet exists. Like, why did like fans have to put all these details together if there are people on the inside who genuinely love her and care about her and like would have, I assume, wanted this information more public if they cared? You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, from what I've read, like it seems like he's really been like put through it, and I don't know, but I agree with that. Like it does, it's like, why are you also like, I don't need cryptic Instagram stories from you, sir.
Yeah. Or he's just too dumb and like has never even thought to like put effort towards it.
I do think he is dumb. And I do think he's somebody that could be easily bullied into silence. Yeah. Like, I do think he's somebody that like, I do believe that you could say to him, hey, if you talk, we could sue you and put your mom in jail. And he'd be like, not my mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, there's no way that they're not using, like, bullying and, you know, blackmail tactics and stuff against him, for sure.
I mean, they picked somebody dumb as rocks on purpose. The fact that he's this hot and this connected and the best he's been able to do is the opening credits scene in Hacks is, like, damning.
Right. No, totally.
Yeah.
It is wild that he has the springboard he has and he hasn't been able to be like, in Fast and Furious 2-12 as just another hot Jack dude.
Yeah. No, I agree. I just think there's something a little sus.
I agree.
I do think that when she's finally like free in quotes, like I think that he would be somebody that has a lot to say. Like he's gonna talk a lot when she's able to, you know, and there's a possibility that maybe he like doesn't want to say certain things or doesn't want to put her in a worse situation by like exposing things or like, I don't know. I just think that there's so much room for us to like speculate that it's hard to say, but I'm anxious to hear what he says when she's free.
I do believe he signed an NDA. If he's on the payroll or not, he had to sign an NDA to get close to her.
This is the thing that I'm waiting for someone with like an actual law degree to do like a viral TikTok about. The word NDA, I feel like has gotten so fucked up because everyone thinks it's like this ironclad thing. An NDA doesn't like supersede your constitutional rights unless there's like proprietary information. So like NDAs for jobs or like on a music video shoot, you sign an NDA being like, you cannot reveal the content of this music video. But like if your rights were violated on that music video shoot, then you get to like they use it to like scare girls and stuff. Like all these like famous men who are like, you had to sign an NDA before hooking up with me. And then they like hurt them. And then these girls are like, well, I signed an NDA. So what can I do about it? It's like, no. Your rights were violated. There's a lot you can do about it. The NDA is void. Like, that's not how that works. Like, you can't not talk about like your own life experiences unless it's like revealing proprietary information that you signed that you wouldn't reveal during an NDA. So like with the Man Repeller thing, I was actually allowed to like, I used to work at a fashion blog that like, I kind of violated an NDA by talking about it on a podcast after I got fired. But like if I revealed like company inner workings and stuff like that, that's like a violation of the NDA. But like saying that like I felt like emotionally abused there was not a violation. Like I'm allowed to do that because it's like my, you know what I mean? Like NDA isn't like bigger than the Constitution, even though I mean, the Constitution is like void at this point, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like people really like the word NDA scares the shit out of people. And it is not as serious as people think. Like there's a lot, like they're kind of just like It's mostly NDAs are scare tactics. Yeah.
You said it 10 times.
I know, but I'm just trying to get it out there because I want people to spill more tea and they're all afraid because I signed an NDA and I'm trying to get the word out. You guys tell us the tea.
No, but I understand that because I do think a lot of people think that like when it comes to an NDA, it just means like you will just go to prison and be executed if you speak the words that you've been told not to speak, when like that's not the case. No, I get that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is even if you did actually violate it, then they have to sue you for violating the NDA, which costs them so much money. And is it worth it? Probably not, especially if you're like a private individual with no like fortune.
Yeah, and I feel like it just makes people more interested in like what's going on when you you know, publicly sue somebody for violating an NDA. It's like, well, then people want to know what you said.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is if he like went and spouted a bunch of shit and they're like, oh, he's lying, then everyone would be like, oh, I guess maybe he's lying, maybe he's not, we have to figure it out. But if they sued him for violating an NDA, they'd be like, oh, fuck, we gotta listen.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be really interested in hearing anything from somebody like Scott, but like, I would love to hear, like, there was a group of guys that Britney like ran with at this time, people like Chris Angel, just like seedy
Chris Angel,
like nasty motherfuckers, like J.R. Rodham, who's also really gross and talked a lot about her sexually. I don't know, it would just be really interesting to hear like their accounts of like just nights with her, to be honest.
Yeah, one of my favorite memoir like side tidbits was when Holly Madison was dating Chris Angel. She said that like he had like a wall in his apartment that girls signed.
Right.
And it said, Britney was here, ! Spears.
Yeah, I love that. I love that he was like obsessively, he like would talk about Britney obsessively to Holly and she'd be like, okay, we get it. I also feel like it's very important in the context of this podcast and what we're talking about to say the Britney stans will lose their shit with this one. Scott Storch very infamously helped produce the song Rebellion for Britney Spears, which is like a huge deal. I mean, that's like, you know, he was a part of Original Doll. Like that's
what I would want to know from him. I would want to know a lot more about the Original Doll, like Lost album, how much of it was made. Like, I mean, we know like Mona Lisa is like a big moment for us in like understanding the Free Britney movement and all of that stuff, like that we started uncovering when we were doing our old Britney podcast. I feel like, I don't know, like learning the backstory of the way she like showed up at Kiss FM barefoot with that
on like New Year's Eve
with like a little dog.
It's just like, what, like, Scott, do you have any memories or was it just like a coke-fueled haze? Like, tell us what happened here.
Yeah, I'd love to know, like, what was the writing process where she's like, you know, writing all these songs about basically her dad being abusive and being like a drunk and, you know, passing all this stuff down to her. Like, what was the vibe in the room?
What was the energy there?
Yeah, tell me everything.
Was it fun?
Was Britney in good spirits? I also feel like it's very important to talk about Scott Storch's relationship with Lil' Kim. It's his most highly publicized relationship. It's a huge part of his legacy, of her legacy, to be honest. It was really, very highly publicized. It started around 2004. And according to him, it was blown up by the media to be more than it actually was. On Hot 97, he told Ebro that they were basically friends who worked together. They hooked up. And Ebro made the point like that it was early in blog culture. So like when you look back on stories from that time, like a lot of them are, you know, like magnified to an extent where they seem way bigger because
like speculative.
Scott
Storch, you're gonna denounce the Lil Kim relationship. That is ballsy on you,
right?
I know.
How dare you be like, not my girlfriend, just a friend.
Like Lil Kim in 2004, like put your lighters up, era Lil Kim. What are you talking about?
How dare you? I mean, that is more upsetting to me than the $1 million a week on jet fuel or whatever.
Jet fuel.
Scott Storch did 9/11. That's my take.
On his like Chipotle from Italy.
Yeah. Statistically, he was in the air too often to have not been a part of it.
What if he was trying to get like insurance money for his like the planes that he was like, I bought too many planes? I'll just fly some into.
He's like, I have 7 planes right now. What can I do?
What if we crash 4 of them?
Yeah. Crash 4. I'll give 1 to Lindsay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so during that time, people were still kind of like learning about who Scott was, and they learned about him through his relationship with Lil' Kim. She really made him, honestly, she made him famous. And all of the hip hop publications hated him because he was a dorky white guy dating Lil' Kim. And it was like, who is this fucking guy that like has Lil' Kim wrapped around his finger? He looks like SpongeBob.
He wishes.
On his best day.
SpongeBob at least has like trim little legs.
In full hair and makeup, he could pull off SpongeBob.
He's not symmetrical the way SpongeBob is symmetrical.
SpongeBob has better skin, let's be honest. So during the time that they dated, he produced Put Your Lighters Up, which is, you know, a huge turning point in her career, in his career, big song for her. And then in February of 2006, he leased a Bentley for Lil' Kim. He leased it. And apparently it was due back in March of 2008. And it wasn't returned because she didn't know that he leased the car. So in April of 2009, a few days after he got out of rehab, he was arrested for grand theft auto because Lil' Kim still had this car. And he told the press that he didn't do anything and that, you know, Kim just wanted to keep the car and it was a misunderstanding. But like, that's so ratchet.
I am humiliated for him to be leasing a bet. Oh my God. Imagine if your like engagement ring was leased. Like 6 years later, they're like, he's like, well, we're married now. We're like, oh my God, a leased car. That is a bad gift.
Right? A leased engagement ring. I wonder how many of these celebrity couples do that, like knowing the relationship isn't going to pan out, being like, well, lease an engagement ring for now. You'll wear it for 6 months. We'll break up publicly. It's fine.
Yeah, it'll all be okay. It'll pay for itself.
Who's the guy who does the Bachelor ring?
Neil Lane.
I wonder if Neil Lane has his like layaway collection of like, or not layaway, like leasing, like a 6 month like PR stunt collection.
Yeah, I mean layaway in pretty much, right? He's like, this is the layaway room. This is a 2010 interview about his the whole like getting arrested because they thought he stole a car gang. It says, like, we partied and she was like, please let me keep the car. I also bought Charlie Baltimore a car for a business deal and found out.
I went to school with Charlie Baltimore's daughter. She was the most beautiful girl in the school. Her name was India.
Really? I love Charlie Baltimore.
And then she has another little sister who's also trying to make it as a rapper right now. I didn't know her because we didn't go to school, but India, the most beautiful woman on the planet, just walking around our high school. And I was like,
oh my God, nothing but love and support to Charlie Baltimore and her entire family. Yeah, he said he bought a car for Charlie Baltimore for a business deal and found out she was already signed. She didn't want to give it back to me and I had to let her keep the car for a year. She got my fucking license taken away from me for fucking running the easy pass. Like, it's just so ghetto. Like, Scott Storch was just so like rich and ghetto at
but
this
like
time.
No wonder he was always in a private plane. He literally was not allowed on a toll road. Do you know what I mean? Like, he could not be behind the wheel of a car. He had to be flying.
Yeah, Uber didn't exist yet.
He's like, you want to go out to dinner, we could fly or we could swim, but let me tell you, I am not allowed on the streets.
Oh, I was gonna say, the idea that he was like buying people planes is so funny to me, because like, what would you do if someone bought you a plane but you didn't, like, I'd be like, I don't have gas money for a plane and I don't know any pilots. Like, does it come with the pilot? Like, pilot not included or what? That's so, it's such a difficult and expensive gift to receive.
And like, where do I put it or whatever?
Yeah. I don't have a driveway.
Yeah, I don't have like an airport.
I don't have a hangar in my house.
Yeah. And then I have a quote from Lil' Kim. This is her, I guess this was her like announcing that they were broken up. She said, yeah, it's done, Kim said, referring to her romantic run with ex-boyfriend Scott Storch. She said, yeah, I have all my jewelry and all of the things he bought me. I have everything. She said, yeah, the repossessed car, I had the car for 6 years. So, I mean, the car situation was something where I could not have anything in my name at the time, anything new in my name at the time when he bought the car for me, because I was going through my court situation. And anyone who knows, when you're going through a major court situation, like what I went through before I was in jail, you're not supposed to buy anything, do anything. You can't do anything at the time. I couldn't do anything at the time. You really can't. So he had the title for a long time. I had no idea he wasn't paying the car note or that he was on drugs. I had no idea. Like, this is just, this is
Lil' Kim. She had no idea he was on drugs. Okay, Lil' Kim, that is a lie. The rest I respect, but do not look me in the face and tell me you don't know that that man whose skin was falling off was on drugs. He had eyeballs that were all the way back in his head.
It's just so wild to me when celebrities have like really mundane problems. Like, oh, my boyfriend wasn't paying the car note. Like, you're Lil' Kim.
I feel like we're in a heyday of that right now because of the internet fam, that there's all of these super famous people who like do not have a dollar to their name.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they had to like keep up the look to keep the followers, but then they like literally cannot afford. They're like, yeah, brands send me PR packages because I would not have face wash if they didn't. Like, I cannot. My card will get declined at CVS. Right. Yeah.
Like, I can't DoorDash dinner tonight. I have nothing to eat. Yeah, so after he dated Lil' Kim, he dated somebody named Erica Mena, who I am obsessed with. She's from Love and Hip Hop. She's one of my favorite reality stars of all time, very underrated. And if I had to sum up Erica in like a couple sentences, I would say that she was an early 2000s video vixen. And she dated a bunch of rappers. Girls. Me too. I love video vixens. And
would you call Amber Rose a video vixen? Was she in videos, or was she just
like a muse?
Yeah,
I don't know if I'd call her a video vixen. I feel like she was like the second wave where it was like post video vixens, and then it was like iconic strippers.
Yeah,
like noted strippers.
Who else would you? I wish I just tried to do a roundup, and I came up with Amber Rose. I came up with Cardi B,
Black China. Black China.
Yes, I came up with Diablo Cody.
Oh, hello.
Iconic stripper.
Iconic stripper.
Yeah. But I feel like a lot of the ones I thought were strippers, I went back and they were not. They were just like sexy women.
Yeah. Like internet hot girls that you're like, oh, you never like did stripping routines. You just like put hot photos on the internet stripped.
It's crazy though, because I feel like nobody did it better than Black China. Like, I knew who Black China was before. I knew her as an iconic stripper.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah, I know her as the woman who just like robbed the Kardashians blind, literally.
Yeah, literally.
She robbed Kardashian.
I mean, I will say she was brilliant. I actually think the stupidest move they made was trying to do a spinoff with the two of them. I think she should have just like gotten pregnant, taken the money. I don't think the show was honestly that good of an idea, but it like didn't hurt them too much because no one cared.
Love that, you know how there's like the slowest gazelle thing where it's like you don't have to be the fastest gazelle, you just can't be the slowest gazelle. I like that she got into that family and said, who is the weakest link here? And
yeah,
it was fucking right, because she came in via Kim.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, the thing is though, you can't make Rob Kardashian interesting no matter what you do. Like,
no, they were like, you could have any business in the world, put your name on one thing, and he was like, socks.
Then he couldn't even do it.
Weed socks, funny ones.
Huh? He couldn't even do it.
Yeah, you can't even sell some socks at fucking Nordstrom, and your sister is selling out of lip kits that have already existed, like, and within seconds. Come on.
And it was pathetic. He should do an incredible Jenny Craig comeback. What do you think they would pay him to get skinny?
So much money.
$10 million.
I mean, Jenny Craig to come back from the grave. I feel like they would have to pay him like an enormous resurrection fee to be like, please, for the love of God, make us relevant again. We accidentally aligned with Kirstie Alley last time, and we cannot fuck up like that again. So let's go with Rob Kardashian.
What if he lined up with Noom? He's like, it turns out it was a mental thing. Like, Noom music. You know what he would do? He would line up with them like intermittent fasting, and then like Chris would get be like frantically trying to call him and be like, that's not actually a company. That's just an idea.
It's like, don't announce anything on Twitter.
Like, nobody owns the rights to intermittent fasting.
He would try to, like, create a company that has, like, It'd be like the biggest like money dump of all time. Like they'd be like, what happens is every day drones drop off your meal at 11 a.m. and then take your food out at 8 p.m. So you intermittent fast.
Like we are losing thousands of dollars per customer right now, but
$10,000 a month in order to keep up with the drone fees.
I will say that I used to really, really, really have like a thing for Rob Kardashian like back in the day. I was in love with him. That mumbling
fool. He was hot.
We were just talking to Amir Yaz, who's a former PR person who went to USC with Rob when he said Rob was hot. And Rob was dating Adrian Bayon.
Oh, his best. Those were his golden years.
The absolute heyday of Rob Kardashian. It was, I mean, he was hot. Like he would just, and the way that like when you didn't know he was dumb and boring, when you thought that he was just kind of like wordlessly moseying through keeping up with the Kardashian scenes, it was like, who is this mystery brother? And then, and then he got like plot lines and you were like, oh no, put him in the background again. Like we don't.
Yeah. He's truly a bumbling idiot. Like the purest definition.
They treat him like, do you remember how, are you a Real Housewives person?
Hardcore.
Okay, remember the season one of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills when Lisa had that like random gay like Iranian that lived in her backyard?
Oh, yes.
And then he tried to sue them or something. That's how Khloé treated Rob. Like he was just like this hot pet they found that they could like, they're like, you can sleep in the garage if you entertain us. Right. He's like her blood relative.
Yeah, and he's like out there with like, I mean, also like he's just like so sad because I feel like he was like, my family's fucking nuts. Like, I feel like if anything, he got like engulfed by his family.
Do you remember the funniest Instagram of all time when Rob Kardashian posted a picture of the Gone Girl and said, this is my sister, Kim?
Never forget. He's so petty. Do you remember when he posted Kylie's number on Twitter?
Yes. That was very
funny. Let me say something. A brother is a brother is a brother. And that is like the truth of the world is that you go up to any woman with a brother and they're like, they have a common experience there. A brother is a brother. I don't give a shit if you are George W. Bush with Jeb. I don't, or Kim Kardashian with Rob or Claire with Thomas. Like a brother is a brother. And I love that for us.
No, it's true. It's true. It was very relatable when we saw him bullying his sisters on Twitter. I was like, aw.
Yes, because if he wasn't doing that, it means they don't love each other.
Yeah,
they're like, they're fighting. I'm gonna
I got us way off. Yeah, we got us way off topic, my bad.
No, you're completely fine. I mean, there is no track to stay on when you're talking about Scott Storch buying people playing.
Oh, can I say something about Scott Storch that actually ties into this? The whole time we've been talking about him, I've been thinking about the family members in his life. Imagine being Scott Storch's like sibling or cousin or like aunt and uncle parent and being like, holy shit, someone in our family like did good, like somebody is going to take care of all of us now. And then watching him amass a fortune that you couldn't even conceive of, $600 million, is like an unconceivable amount of money, and then somehow being like, it's gone. like imagine being the aunt who's like, hi Scott honey, like happy 42nd birthday, anyway, as you know, your niece Angela, she's going to college next year, she got into University of Richmond, we're so proud of her.
And he'd be like, sorry, I already crashed that plane into a tower.
Yeah, he's like, I bought Sierra a Bentley, sorry.
It's like, you're, yeah, the niece cannot have her tuition paid. Like, tuition was not paid for by Scott Storch. Like, I cannot imagine being like, where did the fucking money go?
Your uncle's medical bills are really piling up. And I was just wondering, oh no, you bought Lindsay Lohan a what? Okay, well, never mind.
And it has no resale value. Okay.
Can you imagine every time you need something, like, because now he's like broke, every time you need to buy something, you're like, I used to have $600 million, like, and I bought
Coke. I do that now. I do that with, like, Coca-Cola. Like, sometimes I'll spend money on, like, a nice coffee I can't really afford, and then the next weekend, I'm like, fuck, I threw that iced coffee out. If that iced coffee was a $20 million plane, I would really be kicking myself. I would be like, that was not necessary.
And you're like, I can't afford jeans at, like, Sears, but I used to own a bunch of planes. Like, what had happened?
Small fleet.
I want to talk about his relationship with Paris Hilton a little bit more. Mm-hmm. This is a New York Times article from 2006 when he was working with her. It says, in the coming months, Mr. Scorch's hit-making ability will be put to the ultimate test. He spent a significant portion of last year working with the celebutante Paris Hilton on her debut album, which is scheduled for release this summer. Ms. Hilton has already proven adept at selling books, perfume, racy videotapes, and hamburgers. But will she be able to push albums? Yes, the producer is betting. I think Paris's album is going to take everyone by surprise, he said confidently. Still, walking into the project, Mr. Scorch admitted he had felt some trepidation. I remember having a conversation with Dr. Dre, and he said, Scott, this is a risk. You can either have an incredible success or a big failure, but risk is good. He decided to gamble. Later in the
evening, he should not be gambling.
If anybody shouldn't be gambling, it's him.
Not in his economy.
Later in the evening at a Miami studio, he played a handful of tracks from Ms. Hilton's album. Jealousy was clearly aimed at her ever-shrinking ex-best friend, Nicole Richie. And on It's Like That, Destined for the Clubs, Ms. Hilton, in a breathy, digitally enhanced register, can be heard cooing, gonna lose my clothes. You like that, don't you? Let's get exposed. You know you want to. Mr. Scorch and Ms. Hilton became an item during their time together. The two showed up hand in hand at the 2005 MTV Video Music Awards, and he did buy her a Bentley. He was also purchased one for his ex-girlfriend Lil' Kim when they were an item. Did the two mix business and pleasure? It's always pleasure working with Paris, Mr. Scorch said, and with a sly chuckle. We're good friends. Let the world figure that out. I take the high road. It's like,
that
okay.
That is not the high road.
That, sir, let me tell you something. Let me tell you about the high road.
Not it.
That ain't the high road, sir.
Oh,
not
my God.
It.
I will say, first of all, he bought Paris a Bentley too. That is that like his first date go-to move is to be like, sorry, I missed dinner. This isn't a booty call though, because I got you a Bentley.
This gets weirder. Like, this part of it is the most unbelievable. He said in 2010 that he actually fell in love with Paris. Like, he was, like, deeply in love with her. And he said that he was threatened by her success. And he felt like he needed to be bigger and better than her because she was so successful. So he would do things like fly her to the French Riviera and buy her hundreds of thousands of dollars in jewelry. He bought her a Maybach
music. That's how I know how to say it.
I know. I have to like think about
songs.
Yeah,
I know. Crystal Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, and the Lord's song.
So yeah, he was like deeply, deeply in love with Paris, and I just think that that's crazy that he was like, I need to amass like an even bigger fortune because she's so successful that like I feel threatened by her.
This to me really checks out exactly like everything that we've learned about him. Like, clearly he's driven by insecurity. Clearly he's somebody that needs to compensate by having the most. I think to date a woman like Paris for a man like Scott Storch is I don't want to say this like diminutively, like she is very much a prize.
Right.
But also I think in the way that Kim and Kanye were in love, but in a specific kind of love where when you want to be like the conqueror of the world, you need the number one in the world on your arm. And like, I think he did love Kim because of everything she represented. And I think he like respected that she was like the most beautiful woman in Hollywood. And now he's her wife. And like, that is their pair. I think Scott Storch was in love with Paris's success and like was in love with who she was, which was like the perfect, she is like the perfect production. She produced an entire character. And I think he was probably like in awe of that, the genius that went into the persona of Paris Hilton and the way she conquered LA at the time.
Also,
but I do think he was deeply too insecure to actually date her. And that is the problem with men.
Yeah.
If he didn't want her to be so successful, why did he make such a banging album for her?
That's what I was gonna say. Like, don't then make Stars Are Blind if you're like, I'm threatened by how successful she is. Okay. You fucking
weird
killed her album.
Yeah. And
while we're on the topic of her, I do want to just like kind of quickly explore like this time period where like people who maybe didn't necessarily like, I won't say deserve, because whoever wants to do music should be able to do music, honestly, but people you maybe wouldn't expect to do music were being given beats by people like that worked with like Britney and NSYNC, like, you know, people who like actually made music. So it was like this really weird time where somebody like Paris Hilton could just put out an album and the music was good because they were songs that were maybe written for Janet Jackson. Like, that's a really weird thing.
I think there's music and then there's bops. And he was making music for people who made bops, and you can kind of go straight to the bops without the music. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good point.
Like, you don't really need the musicians, whatever, in there necessarily.
Especially because this was like the heyday of singles and stuff, because of like, it was like sort of the emergence of internet music. And so I feel like people, like, it used to be an album. Like, you used to have to put out an album, and then all of a sudden you didn't. Like, and this was one that was kind of starting. Like, it wasn't fully in effect yet. And I think that there was like a really bad phase in like the late 2000s to honestly like last year, where no one cared about albums anymore. And then all, like, now I feel like there's like been a real resurgence of like putting together that like cohesive work and having these like phases to your career and like whatever. But I think that, I think that's maybe one of the things that you kind of like see from the Scott Storch effect, is these people who like were just like putting out a bop without being a musician or having anything to say or like any sort of like holistic
like
art, you know?
And yeah, like Stars Are Blind is almost the perfect example, because that was truly the song of the summer. Like, that was a huge single. Everybody was listening to Stars Are Blind, pretending that they weren't. And it was like, yeah, Paris put out an album that nobody really cares about, but like, this single is so good.
Powerful.
It's, and it stood the test of time. It's still good.
It's still good.
Oh my God, it's so good.
You know who else's album I feel has not aged a day and is really good? Low-key Ashley Simpson.
Oh, Ashley Simpson music is so good. I have a really extensive theory about the way that she like took the bullet for every lip syncer on the planet.
People listening to this right now are laughing because she's my North Star in a lot of ways. Like, Ashley is literally, I'm like more invested in her career than Joe Simpson. It's like sick.
L-O-L-O-L-O-L-O-V-E.
I actually just recorded an Ashley and Jessica episode with my friend Kelly on the other podcast with you, Beyond the Blinds. And we talked a lot about that. The punishment that Ashley received is just like, everybody should be looking back on that and be really embarrassed by how they treated a fucking like 19, 20 year old. I don't even know if she was 20, like a young girl, for having a backing track on SNL. Are you fucking kidding?
That was not her fault. That was SNL's fault. I mean, also, but do they know Yo-Yo Ma doesn't play like the inauguration live? Like, people do backing tracks. That's how live works.
All the time.
That's how everyone on SNL works. That's how every live performance ever, I don't know, show up at the VMAs sometime. It's so crazy. Like, the only person who, like, I believe sings live is Selena Gomez, because they definitely can't make it that bad.
Right, totally. No, it's crazy. And to, like, denounce every bit of work she put into that album and all, like, you know, she wrote, I always say that I think Ashley was the pre-Taylor, because she wrote all of those songs about guys, and then we were able to follow it because of the show and
the Lindsay Lohan song, the song about what's the one that's like a comeback to Lindsay Lohan? I Didn't Steal Your Boyfriend.
Yeah, iconic.
Yes.
That is such a good song. Also, I have to say, she did at long-term win, because I think the baby she has with Evan Ross, that daughter, is like one of the cutest little girls out there.
Oh yeah. I also feel like the long game of like now being a member of the Ross family is like so iconic. And
it's so funny that she's part of like one of the biggest musical legacies in America, in a way that like Jessica just won't be.
I know.
Yeah.
You know what I say about Jessica? So we read Jessica Simpson's memoir, and I like to say that Jessica Simpson was Kim Kardashian, but instead of a sex tape, she had music.
Like, it was just her like foray into business, but it wasn't her. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
She has no interest in doing music. It was just what got her in the game. It was like the thing she became known for, but then she took that and became a mogul. She, in her core, isn't, like, I think Demi Lovato is somebody who just wants to make music. Do you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, I think, if God bless, if Demi Lovato survives another 40 years, they might not. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if they make it through this, they will still be a singer songwriter.
The thing that makes me so happy about Jessica, about her biggest success being fashion, and I literally just got done talking about this, but so sorry to anybody listening who's like hearing this twice, but whatever, I can't help myself. Jessica was so responsible for, Jessica got no credit in the early and mid 2000s for her impact on fashion. We all knew, because we were watching Newlyweds, but like, Jessica had a massive impact on fashion, like maybe one of the biggest of her like graduating class of pop stars. And, you know, with Lord knows
we're not wearing khaki shorts like Britney.
I mean, like, the fucking Louis Vuitton bag, the shawls, like, her ripped up denim. Like, Jessica really did the damn thing. And it's crazy that, you know, like, over 10 years later, like, her business is fashion. And it took so long for people to realize that she even had a fashion sense that was, like, worth paying attention to. It's just crazy.
She has a real... every girl fashion sense. I think that that's why she doesn't get credit for her fashion sense, is because she has a real, like, it, I think that it, because also with fashion, like, if you look at it, if she's wearing something like 6 months ahead of time and like kind of setting that trend, by the time you like look back, you're like, oh yeah, we're all wearing this. And it's like, yeah, because she like kind of.
Right. That's exactly.
Was like it, helping to influence that. It's like when people like look back for comedy, people will look back on like George Carlin or something and be like, yeah, it's like pretty basic joke writing. It's like, yeah, because for the last like 40 years everyone's been emulating exactly what he's doing, so you've heard it all before, but like it wasn't basic then. And so I feel like her, but with fashion the cycles are so much shorter. So
yeah. I had this conversation with my friend the other day because we were talking about Ugg boots and just like how crazy it is that Ugg boots like still are around. Like they're like secretly around, like everybody wears Ugg boots but you don't talk about buying them or owning them. And I was like, well, you know, Jessica invented like the way that we wear Ugg boots now. I was like, because of Jessica. And she didn't believe me. And I Googled pictures and I was like, slouchy ripped up denim, like shoved inside an Ugg boot. That was a Jessica thing. I'm sorry, but that
I
was...
I love these white girls who are just trash to their core. God bless them. There is something so goddamn endearing about a woman who cannot for the life of her level up. And I was like...
You put $1 billion in her bank account and she still won't buy a new pair of Ugg boots.
They're still going to have salt stains all around the rim. We are close to wrapping up here. I have a couple more girls that I want to talk about. No, you're fine. I mean, there's, like I said, there's no track. I want to talk about his relationship with Lindsay. Of course, he dated Lindsay and did some music with her. He dated her after Paris, of course, because it was 2007 and Paris and Lindsay were just fucking everybody together. Yeah, he dated Lindsay, and during the process of them dating, he bought her over $1 million in jewelry, which, you know, Lindsay was just like, yes, keep it coming.
She's like, oh. I have a crazy Lindsay Lohan story that I always forget, and I'm always like, I dated a guy who cheated on me with Lindsay Lohan once.
Are you fucking kidding?
I always forget about this.
And somehow it's like the most important thing that's ever happened to me. And it only like comes up once a year in my brain.
Tell me more. Tell me more. Dun, dun,
da, da, and it's funny because when we talked about Lindsay Lohan, I don't remember it, but when you said he fell in love with her, I dated briefly Liam Neeson's son.
Okay. I did
not know it was Liam Neeson's son until I got back to his house. And I was like, why are you obsessed with Star Wars and not? And then I was like, oh my God, your dad. Okay. But when we were dating, Perez Hilton, like he like sends me a text one day and he's like, hey, everything you're seeing online, like it's not true. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I Google his name and I look it up, and him and Lindsay Lohan had been caught coming out of a bathroom stall together at One Oak in New York City downtown. And it was like on Perez Hilton and TMZ. And he's like, it's not what it looks like. Like we were, and I was like, oh, it just looks like you guys were doing drugs together. He was like, we weren't doing drugs. And I was like, oh, okay, then it does look like you're cheating on me.
Yeah, so
and
then you're fucking?
Yeah, I was just like, okay, so now I just think you're both doing drugs and having sex in the bathroom stall. But he was like, no. And the thing is, I remember because he had met her the night before. They started like hanging out every day that week. And he's like, oh, I met Lindsay Lohan last night. Because of course, Lindsay Lohan was in the Parent Trap with his mom.
Right. Oh my God, that's too much.
And so he was telling me, he's like, I met her and she is so charismatic. And he said that she had like an entourage of like 20 dudes who were just like circling her basically, but that she is so charismatic in her life that you're just like drawn to her. And he's like, he really is like, yeah, I don't know. You would just wait in a hotel till it was like your turn to talk to her. Like everybody was just sitting there waiting to get to talk to her. But I think when you have that much power and you have that much notoriety, and I think she is very beautiful. Like he's like, no, she really is. Like everyone's just sitting around waiting for her.
She's extremely magnetic. That's the thing about her, is like,
I believe that.
I also think that she's one of the most interesting people to ever be photographed. Like I could look at pictures of Lindsay Lohan. I mean, I have for, you know, 12, 13 fucking years every day of my life, just nonstop. Like she's so fascinating.
12, 13 years cumulatively. So if you like add up the amount of time in my life that I've been looking at pictures of Lindsay Lohan, that would be like 12 years. And then I her, also
like, biting her fucking finger. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You remember those ones with the knives? Who was she with? Was she with
Oh hell yeah, Vanessa
Lachey.
Vanessa Lachey.
Pre Lachey, yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna end this episode by talking about his relationship with Kim Kardashian, because Scott Storch had sex with literally everybody.
Now there is a bitch who could not get a single.
Oh God.
Turn me up. She cannot drop a song.
Kim trying to do music is like one of my favorite things to ever happen in Hollywood history.
Didn't she try it more than once? I feel like she kept on like dropping hints about it or being like, I kind of want to, LOL, expecting someone to be like, no, absolutely do it. And everyone was like, ha.
Like, well, your voice is very shrill, but okay. So Scott said in 2009, an interview with Details, oh, bless you. Details magazine, he said, after a bong hit, well, this is the little snippet of the interview. After a bong hit, Storch loosens up a bit and the conversation turns to his sexual conquests. Tops among them, Kim Kardashian. She was amazing, he says. She denies she and Scott Storch had sex. Dude, she was so fucking hot. But there were others, lots of them. Three or four at once. I made Wilt Chamberlain look like an angel, he says, his face darkening. I feel bad about that, being a pig. You meet a lot of good people that aren't as fucked up as you, and you manipulate them and take advantage of them. And listen, without meaning to sound derogatory, I'm only using this term as a way to explain a time period. This is when Kim was known in the industry as like a studio hoe.
Like, she Kim really was though.
He was. She would show up at studios and like hang out or whatever with these rappers. And that was like how people in the industry really like kind of knew Kim. It's like she was the girl that would just like show up. There was like a group of handsome black men in a room.
I mean, She loves seeing how music comes together. She's really inspired by the process.
Can I say? And she got the king of the studio. Look, she married one of them.
Yeah, totally. She did what she
married two of them.
She did. Kim had a long-term goal in mind, and it was to become famous by doing literally anything she physically could.
And I have to say, like, when people are like, oh, she got famous with a sex tape, me and Ashley are big believers that family was going to be famous no matter what. And the things that happened. But if we had been in every alternate universe, the Kardashians end up famous. Like, that was going to happen, unless there was like a nuclear war where they were wiped off the face of the planet. Their ultimate destiny was to all be famous, and it was going to happen no matter what.
Like, the amount of things that Kris had been throwing against the wall since the time that she was like 22 years old, even before, since she was 16 years old and she moved in with a pro golfer, and like then realized he was kind of a dud, moved on to Robert Kardashian, like because he was best friends with OJ. Like, it was a whole, I mean, she really had been climbing that ladder since she was 16 years old and reached the top because she needed to.
And honestly, I mean, I say the same thing about Paris. Like, I think that Paris would have become famous. You know, obviously a lot of people watched the first season of The Simple Life because they wanted to see the girl from the tape. But like, I do think that Paris also would have become famous no matter what. And
I mean, tape only got picked up because she was a socialite. She was a fixture.
Yeah.
Exactly. She already had such a natural magnetism. People were drawn to her. And and who's to say, like, if those tapes hadn't happened, like, maybe they both would have had careers that were easier to navigate. Like, it was hard as fuck to be a Kardashian for like 12 years. They were the most hated people in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. People, I mean, they really had to, like, I mean, I think that show is like such a brilliant work of art because of the way that, like, if the early seasons, the way that they balanced like family and like being like aspirational and like rich, but then also seeming like down to earth and attainable and like every family and like fighting with each other. So there was drama, but then like caring about each other and being there for each other so that you still like, that they're still sympathetic characters. Like, there's so many plates in the air, and the way they balanced it for like 13 out of the 20 seasons was beautiful.
I agree with that. And like the pivots that they made with the production, where it was like they allowed the show to grow with like the times, you know?
Like using social media and like random announcements to like hype up the seasons. I feel like it,
and like slowly breaking down the fourth wall. It wasn't like a, you know, a big moment, like we're talking to the cameras now. It was like over time you saw like they're interacting with producers. You can see boom mics to the point that like they've started to present it as like docuseries almost.
I mean, the Jordan Woods scandal, the way that they're answering the phone during a confessional.
Right. Oh my God. Come on. That alone.
That all goes back. I had to say the final scene of The Hills, one of the most iconic moments of reality TV show, where she's driving off and the set just falls down.
Yes. Yes. Lauren's last toothy tongue smile.
My God, Lauren Conrad is...
Somebody literally just said to us that she should do a memoir. And I was like, it'll be the first book with beige font on cream paper.
Oh my God.
What a bowl of an oatmeal of a book.
No, truly, a truly like a porridge. Like if the book isn't about being basic and capitalizing on being basic, I don't want to read it because that's the only thing you've ever done for me.
It's oatmeal made with oat milk. It's just a lot of nothing.
Nothing. Oh, God. Lauren Conrad, don't even get me started.
We can't. I'm sorry. We can't.
Don't get me started. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's pretty much Scott Storch's life in a nutshell. He had a real flash in the pan, you know, kind of career. He spent a lot of money, did a lot of drugs, had a lot of sex, blew it all. Again, I really suggest his documentary on YouTube is super interesting. He's just somebody that, you know, has made a big impact on your life, whether you know him or not.
Thank you so much for having us on. This was so fun.
Yeah,
so
thank you guys for coming on. This was amazing.
I'm about to go make a Scott Storch playlist in honor of him. Maybe he can like buy some food or something.
Well, tell people where they can find your podcast and like what you guys are currently working on.
Ash, you want to take it away?
Yeah, our podcast is called Celebrity Memoir Book Club. It's on anywhere you're listening to podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. We also have a Patreon where we go a little bit more unhinged.
Off the rails.
But it's top secret. So if you join the Patreon, you are signing a confidentiality.
An NDA. And you will go to prison if you say anything about it. You will go to prison.
Absolutely.
We do have the means to sue you.
Right.
Anyway, and that's what we use the Patreon money for, is we're creating a little fund to sue the shit out of people who rat. Anyway, where else are we? On TikTok, Celebrity Memoir Book Club Podcast, on Instagram at Celebrity Memoir Book Club, Twitter, CNBC_podcast. What else?
I'm Claire the Scare on Instagram, CLAIRE the Scare.
Oh yeah, I'm Ashley Ham with 3 M's.
Well, thank you guys so much. I'm literally at this moment gonna go clean and listen to the rest of Jenna Jameson.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I'm so excited. This was so fun. I'm happy we were able to do this.
Me too. Yeah. Finally, this was so much fun. Well, yeah, you guys have to come back.
I'd love to have you on we gotta do a Patreon episode with you so we can really get in. The Patreon's more fun because we don't have to do homework. We just get to say whatever we want.
Oh my God, I would love to. Seriously, I'm not kidding.
Oh my God. Okay, so we'll set that up. I'm excited.
All right.
This was so fun. Thank you.
I hope you guys enjoyed learning about Scott Storch. Bye.
I did.
I really did.
Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at DunzoPod. That's DUNZO. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.